Welcome to Tilth Talk Radio. Today we're going to be talking about some more topics from the field. Our spotlight will look at 2024 and how this may be the year of the rootworm. Egg History Minute, we'll talk about the milk tradition at the Indy 500. Cool Beans, That's Corny, we'll have some current events, and we'll wrap things up with a Field Good Friday. With me today are the real Bill Schomburg.
Hey guys.
Todd Schomburg.
Hey to all the Tilthies out there.
And I'm Matt Brueger, all with Tilth Agronomy. So yeah, last week, Bill, I pretty much did call Todd your name.
Oh, nice.
Because I'm just so used to saying your name first.
First.
And it's alphabetically first. But yeah. Nope, looking right at him. Still just called him Bill.
Here today. Sorry, Todd.
It was okay. I've been called your name many times.
We were commiserating about how, both of us have had older brothers that we've been called their names throughout the years.
Like, all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Teachers. So does he call you Mike now?
No. No, Adam. Please don't.
Right.
Oh. No, we were saying if your own parents get it mixed up, you probably mix up your own kids' names.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. All the time.
My mother-in-law, calls her kids her brother's name, brothers and sisters' names. Like, I don't know how that happens, but.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Whatever.
It's a whole different, ball game of just, at least if you're in the neighborhood of, I called you the wrong kid's name is something, but, to go a whole other, family step up.
Yep.
That's a different one.
It's different, yeah.
Well, it's getting a little drier. Hopefully before the next rain, we'll have some opportunity. I saw a lot of hay cut in the last 24 hours. So, and I know, Bill, you had some pictures of some kind of rough-looking harvested
Yeah, it was field. A field entrance, so it was kind of beat up. But actually, the same farm I was by yesterday, and they were dump carting. It got way better in a day.
So there was a day where we could cut today, it might dry, and it was just mudding fields with triple mowers, and then it did seem like it was better, by the next day. So it was you had to be just a little patient, and even that, the triple mower was still leaving quite a bit of cleat marks, but at least it wasn't totally, making a huge mess out there. And I don't know, and some fields are going to take longer to dry. It's just I can't believe how high the creeks and rivers and streams are again.
They put a no wake on the Wolf River yesterday.
It seems like it's as high as it's been all spring right now.
Yeah, it's higher than it was after the snow melt.
Yes.
Snow melt.
You're right.
Sorry, that's finger quotations for those of you who can't see us. No, it was interesting. Yesterday was, and today so far, hopefully will shape up to be the same. But, we had sun pretty much all day yesterday, a little bit of a breeze. As far as drying conditions go, I think it got a little warmer than they even thought. It was, I know even on the truck, I had 70s.
So. Even Wednesday, it got warmer because it was only supposed to get to 60, 64, and it was pushing 70.
I mean, the overnight lows are probably what's creating some issue, getting that moisture from getting down in the 40s at night. But
Searing had 37 two nights ago because I asked a grower yesterday, and he's like, I got a little nervous.
Yeah, I could imagine.
It's getting too close for comfort at that point.
Well, and we went from being windy all spring.
Right.
Now, need a little wind here and get nothing. Just
quit playing with your dinghy.
Yeah. We need Tommy Boy back here to help us bring in the wind. Yeah.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year so far with the, seemingly never ending wind that now we can't find. Last year we couldn't buy rain. Now we can't make it stop. At least we're getting some sunshine. It's not just cloudy overcast. And the rerun from last year of the wildfire smoke has only been.
So I read an article.
1 or 2 days.
That it never died out. And that's why we're. The fires never officially died out. And they kind of reached out.
Had you listened to the podcast from last week, you'd know that we've never covered
mind.
This.
Sorry.
William.
That just tells you I don't listen to the podcast if I'm not on it. So.
I see how it is.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't like you guys when I'm not here.
Well, we won't tell you what else we Ooh, said about we you. Don't care. We can yeah. talk about Bill all we want when he's not here.
Touche.
But yeah, no, we're hopefully, it looks like they've kind of pushed out some of the rain till Monday. I mean, it keeps kind of popping back in a little bit over the weekend, but
not a good chance.
They're using the word isolated.
Yes, isolated.
In like 40% chances, so it's changed that way, but you never know. Somebody might get some, and who knows, but hopefully, too, we just need to miss one rain. It would help us a lot.
Well, we kind of missed, other than the Wrightstown Wednesday area, we missed some pop-up showers the other day. Monday wasn't quite as... I mean, Monday night, I think, was when we got a chunk, but it was supposed to rain all day Monday, and it didn't. We just got some overnight, so we're kind of trending in that direction of we're not necessarily getting all of what is forecasted, so hopefully that continues.
There's still enough to go. The guys that are talking, I'm sure there's prevent plant talk, and we'll talk a little bit about this in a minute, but there's still guys that got a lot to do.
Yeah.
Still got cows, right? Those cows got to eat something.
Still need something, yeah.
So...
And no, it feels like it's everything's all out of whack because you got some guys that are done and some guys hardly started, and it's just different. Some people are done with first crop 2 weeks ago, and some are just starting. So it's all over the board, and I don't know which is right or wrong either. To be a farm that you didn't even do first crop yet at all, but your corn's mostly in, versus some that are done with first crop with no corn in, I think they're both right or wrong. It depends on how you want to manage your forages, probably.
Yeah.
Like you and I were talking, Todd, a minute, you know, beforehand, a couple guys couldn't plant corn. And
right.
And they beat that Sunday, Monday morning rain that couple weeks ago, and they're probably happy the hay's in.
And very many of these windows, we were like a day away. That, like, even one of them, I know there was a Saturday night rain that was kind of unpredicted that hit certain areas, and it just, I mean, they would have got a whole lot done in a day because you're banking on it, and then you get rained out. So those are always frustrating, too, where it's like the hurry up and wait, and it's the working kind of longer hour, you know, working through the night sometimes, so it's tricky.
And I mean, starting tomorrow, it's June dairy month. So there's dairy breakfasts to go to. It always kind of stinks when you got field work you have to do and can't go get yourself some delicious dairy breakfast. Hopefully the farms that are hosting these dairy breakfasts have a plan. I know one in particular, I saw Winnebago County, they're directing people to go to a couple churches and a school in Amro to get bussed to the farm. So either the hay's not off, the field's too wet, both. But either way, if you're planning on going to the Winnebago, I think it's Grilled Cheese Days. Is that
grilled cheese days, something?
Grilled Cheese something. I apologize to the people of Winnebago County that I can't remember what theirs is called, but that's kicking things off tomorrow, actually, on the 1st. So
it is cool to do one right away, the 1st. Brown County's the 2nd out at Wheezy's, so that one, too, will be right away this first weekend. And Matt, you had said Out of Gamey's would be the 9th?
9th, yeah, so a week from Sunday.
So there'll be, it feels almost like too early for, like, not all the schools are out.
Right.
And you got June dairy month starting. I mean, that's it's kind of neat, but also weird at the same time. And everybody will be doing first crop yet.
Well, yeah, that's just corn. The thing is, I've, like I said, a number of farms cut in the last couple days here, and so there's going to be a lot of tractor traffic and all that. So if you're going to a dairy breakfast, be ready to not only wait for that traffic, but you may have some tractors moving in and out that you'll have to go around. It is still tractor season. There's still going to be a lot of moving parts out on the road, so be careful. Between road construction, harvesting, and everything else, there's a lot of things going on out there. So you got to keep your head on a swivel.
Hey, parking at Wheezy's, it looks like there's still going to try to park in the field, so maybe that has changed, but on the website it still looks like
and they were saying it was cut like the Thursday and then they're going to chop it Saturday. So hopefully it has enough time to dry and they don't make... The other bad part is if there's any ruts in it from the equipment, and then you dry it.
Yeah, it'd be bottoming out when you're...
And there's probably going to be wet spots, so hopefully there'll be people that aren't just trying to drive wherever out there and get stuck or...
Grilled cheese days, sorry, is the Winnebago one. And yeah, they're asking folks to park at St. Mary's Church, H.B. Patch School, and Grace Lutheran Church for a park and ride. June Dairy Month style.
Yeah, I don't know. Back by unpopular demand, maybe? The JDM Challenge.
Ooh.
Oh, have we?
We haven't discussed that yet.
For next week?
We're doing it.
It's happening.
It's not June yet, but I think we got to do something, right? I don't know what the... we've done most of the dairy, I feel like, but maybe not. The new dairy thing I keep hearing about is, and I was calling it kefir, but apparently it's pronounced kefir, but it's like a...
So it's not Andy from Outagamie County?
No, it is not.
Brand?
It's not. Yeah, and it's like,
it's a non-dairy
fermented dairy. It's like a fermented yogurt drink. So it's
like yogurt kombucha?
Yes. It's the yogurt equivalent of that. So it gives you a bunch of like the good bugs and
good bugs and a good buzz?
No. It's fermented. There's no alcohol in it.
Well, why would I drink that then?
So no, that part. And then, like, on the one bottle of the brand, it calls it the Champagne of Dairy, which champagne I think is dairy. Fun.
I think next week
we should have to have a high life with it, too?
Right.
Next week for the JDM Challenge, we should do an episode at the end of the day, and then we can do dairy alcoholic drinks.
Oh, Tippy Cows and...
Tippy Cows, a little... I don't know if Bailey's actually have dairy in it.
I think a little, but, yeah, like you say, we could...
We'd have to find out, and that would be part of the challenge, is to... Taste test the different. Maybe we'd have to open it to just dairy themed alcohol. But the other thing dairy we haven't done is goat dairy.
We've never done
goat cheeses or
feta.
Does that count in June Dairy Month? Yeah,
I mean, it's dairy.
You know, it doesn't count.
A lot of angry letters now.
You know, it doesn't count.
Almond milk, or oat milk. Almond juice.
Silk.
Yes.
Soy milk.
Does not count.
Because it's not milk.
It's not from a mammary.
Soybean water, almond water, oat water. Like, why is it okay for us to drink aloe vera juice, but we can't? It's not like it's aloe milk.
No. Wait, can we call anything that, like apple milk? I don't see why.
You can drink it. We squeezed the apples. We milked the juice out of the apples. So.
Let's try to get, banana
just milk. Just more than we could say for almond milk, because that's just like blended into
What I'm picturing, have you ever seen banana juice? No, because there's like no juice in it. Like you don't.
No, not without the actual banana
We could make
itself.
Banana milk, I feel like, because, yes, that's all they're doing with this almond.
Is that our third JDM challenge, trying to make milk out of things that aren't milk?
Milk, yes.
Oh boy,
I'm starting the all milk June, so, and water I can drink
and water
and milk.
You should hopefully just drink some water. Yeah,
I think I got it figured out. Just drink milk. Yeah, it's nothing to figure out.
Are you going to film a documentary?
I should.
Like Super Size Me.
Didn't that guy just die?
He did, actually.
Oh really?
That's what made me think of it, actually. Yeah, he
did. He keep
53? I think he was.
Whoa!
Like
because of that
high cholesterol.
I think he had cancer or something. Morgan Spurlock. Let's see here.
It's crazy. You know his name.
Yeah, you know the Super Size Me guys.
Well, he literally just died. It was in the news, guys. Come on. See if it says. Yep, he was 53 years old. I'm trying to see if they say what his cause of death was.
I'm guessing you watched the movie.
I've never actually seen the documentary. No, he had like a TV show for a while too. Mm-hmm. I think I might have seen an episode of that. Yeah, he had complications from cancer.
Big Macs gave him cancer?
Well, because there's a guy that holds a world record for eating. I don't know if it's Big Macs specifically or like McDonald's hamburgers. And I swear to God, the guy eats like 8 a week or something like that. It's like, might even be more.
He eats one a day for sure, right, is the deal? Yeah.
Right.
Because then he keeps all the containers, which I think is awesome too.
Like, and he's been doing it since like either the 70s or 80s. So it's a long time. And he's not dead, so... I guess that's...
And he actually looks, like, kind of skinny. Like, he's not...
No, yeah, he's not what you would imagine someone who eats McDonald's all the time. Yeah, he is 70 years old. He's eaten 728 Big Mac burgers just in 2023.
Oh, okay, I'm like...
His lifetime total, so... 365 days a year, at least two
a day.
A day. Bringing his lifetime total to 34,128. And guess where he's from? Fond du Lac, Wisconsin.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Like he still lives there, or he like is Big Mac man.
Hold on. This article's from March.
So remember that article that came out that said if you eat a hot dog, you lose like
yeah
10 minutes of your life, and if you eat peanuts, you gain.
So yeah, what's 34,000 Big Macs due to your? He should have been dead 20 years ago, probably. Yeah, he still lives in Fond du Lac, apparently. So
that's awesome.
Let's see here, he saved the receipt and package from every Big Mac he's eaten.
The package part's wild.
72.
First one, 1972, May 17th. So. We're actually like 2 weeks past his anniversary, so it was 72 to 24. That's, yeah, 34 years he's been.
More than that.
Through the pandemic, that'd be tricky. There'd be some 40, tricky 50, times 40. Where you can't.
42 years.
You know, you're just going through the drive-through.
52.
52, yeah.
I was born after that, so.
Wow. You're right. Wow, 52 years he's been doing that. he used to eat up to 9 a day, he said, but usually stops at 2 now.
It's got to
be 9 a day. What?
It's got to be all he eats.
And he said he once ate a Whopper in 1984, but it didn't hit the spot like a Big Mac. It's one and done on the Whopper.
That's like 2 a day. It's like 600 600 a year.
Yeah, and like you said, last year he hit 728. So some weeks he must
McDonald's
do.
McDonald's giving him free like these or free Big Macs to like promote it. I feel like this is
I don't know
such an untapped.
So is this like a regular at a bar where the bartender just slides the drink, you know, when you walk in, like you go into the McDonald's and they just hand you two Big Macs.
Well, he's held the record for 24 years now, so he's just he's just stacking right. on now.
Now, like, I mean, this is like the Tom Brady of Big Macs. Like, how do you, you know, it's just a lot of things to beat. Or Michael Jordan of Big Macs. Like, there's a lot of titles there. It's the
Ricky Henderson of stolen bases.
If you start now, Todd.
No,
and you double it. You go 4 a day.
I didn't even think I got to just start giving my kids Big Macs and, like, see which one of them is, yeah.
Sorry, son.
Yeah.
Your college fund is gone.
You're it. This is what your life's goal is just to eat Big Macs.
Beat this guy in Fond du Lac.
2 a day, every day. So, yeah, he's 70, so he started when he was
20-ish, 20.
18.
Yeah.
So he's been doing it for 52 years. So, you could get the jump start. What, Jack's what, like 7, 6?
Yeah, 7, so yeah.
So, there you go, man. He could do.
You won't see the end of it. You'll be gone by then when he's 70.
He could see the record by
the time
before 70, because presumably Donald Gorski will not live more than another 20 years. And who knows if he'll be able to eat Big Macs that entire time. But yeah, no, that's a nice little tangent we've gone on.
Right,
we should probably get into our actual topic for the day.
Nah.
All started with the Super Size Me guy dying. All right. Well, here we go. You guys ready to get into our topics?
Let's go.
So wheat. We'll start there. Bill, what do we got?
Yeah, just again, things that come up during the week, right? This is a time of year when we have all those conversations with farmers about problems. And I did last week in your podcast, I did see that you guys were thinking about talking about it, and then it just didn't happen. So, but this is the time of year when if you want to get those fungicides out on wheat, it's kind of the time. If you're not scouting, you better be. I'm noticing I don't know if you guys are, but I'm noticing very different emergence on wheat heads, like even within a farm, like planted within a couple days. Like
I was on a field yesterday where there was a variety split in the field and, you know, planted the same time, all that. And one of the varieties, the heads were all out, and the other one, they were like a little ways away. Yeah. Even color too, like one of the varieties looked really green. And the other variety kind of had an off yellow look to it. Well, it's the same nitrogen, same everything. So just kind of how that variety looks.
Seen a lot more patchy yellow spots in,
wheat
in general this year, but it's wetter.
So. Right, with the wet soil.
Tile versus non-tiled on one farm. I've got, you know, two wheat fields. One's tiled, one's not. And you can see
night and day. I bet some you this
differences,
year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even within the field, I was in a field this week where the heads were all, like, some heads were all out and pollinating already, and there were some like just barely coming out. So it was like even kind of that how they woke up in spring or something like that was slower in spots.
Sure. Yeah, it's been a, you know, as we've been saying all along, a very unique year, 2 years if we count last year. I mean, things have been going places, so I'm not entirely surprised to see some differences out there, but it is always interesting when you see that to gauge, you know, fungicide timings and stuff makes it a little more difficult when you don't have consistent
emergence
of your heads.
Yeah, and now we're trying to, like, normally this time of year, especially a lot of our wheat fields are no-tilled, so they're pretty firm, and we're not playing that, like, do we have to worry about rutting up our wheat fields on fungicide timing? And actually sent some maps over this morning that we're going to do drone on fungicide for wheat. And it's like, wow, that's kind of a novel concept this year, but it is pretty wet. So, but we want to, the research shows that we want to start that timing of application 5 days after the start of enthesis, which enthesis is when we start to flower. We can do it up to 7 days after, but 5 days is kind of that window. And the cool part there is, years ago, I used to just do it on flag leaf, and it's like, well, now we get head scab. So we kind of got some fungicides. Now we can delay and we can cover that flag leaf for that protection, but also get that head covered for head scab, which is very important. So by doing that, getting that 5 days after the start of enthesis, then we're going to potentially reduce the DONs or vomitoxins in that wheat. So that's a good thing for guys that are feeding it. But that can be difficult because, like we just talked here, the unevenness of that head emergence can be a big deal. For me, when I'm looking at a field and I start to see flowers, like that's the time we just go, because by the time the logistics get and you get it ordered and whoever's spraying it gets it there, maybe you got a weather day or two, it's too windy, you're in that boat of let's just get it done at that point.
No, a lot of times you just got to pull the trigger, and because sometimes you don't have a lot of say. You got to get on a list for an airplane or something, and the guy's like, well, I'm doing it today, so it's happening. And you hope you can get as close to optimal as possible in those scenarios. But if you're doing it yourself, or if you can get in with a ground rig this year, which is potentially going to be an issue, you might have a little more control over that timing.
Prosaro, Corumba, Maravis Ace, kind of the, is it Maravis or Maravis? I don't know.
It's Maravis.
Maravis. Those are kind of the three main ones that I kind of run with. And we want to make sure we kind of, when we get to this stage, after boot, we just want to kind of get to the point where we stay away from those strobes, because we can actually do the opposite. We can increase and flare those DON levels. So, get out and scout your fields. Look at what wheat head emergence and flowering you're at, and you know, probably here the next weather window, Monday, Tuesday, get that taken care of.
All right.
Moving on.
Next up, we get what happens if we can't plant?
What do you think that's gonna? I mean, I'm thinking there's gonna be some at this point. Now we're June 1st tomorrow. We got to get to a point, right, where some guys are pulling the pin. Potentially, I'm having those little bit of conversations with some guys.
We're talking about it, but not talking about it, because it's like you want to have a plan, but you don't want to. You still want to. To me, it's like we're in the fourth quarter. I don't know if we're overtime yet. Probably overtime a little bit, and it's like we're still trying to win here or do something. So yeah, you don't want to talk about, but you do want to have a plan. If okay, this. You know, I'm going to try to get all these fields in, and if I got this 50 acres here left, I will do something different or something like that. So I think there's the talk of that whenever we get to this time, a lot of it has to go to what else can we do to get forage for our dairy cows? Like, how do we do that?
Right. Do we just plant sorghum at this point?
Is there an alternative there? And then obviously soybeans too are still okay to put in, you know, more so than like a grain corn. So just having the conversation of all the hardest part, I think, is you planned all winter, you know, you got the crop planned on, it's all in Snap Plus, everything's planned, all this. And then it's like the whole crop plan is basically scrapped because you're changing certain things or doing
something. I've got a couple of growers that don't have anything planted, and it's like all this hybrid stuff we talked about.
Right.
Like that. We're not even close to any of those things that we talked about.
Right, you plan I want this specific variety with these traits here. You know, all winter you had that all detailed out, and then now it's like, well, what can I get? And a lot of times when you trade down, it's most of the time it's hard to get triple stacks under 95 day in general. So that's a consideration too. So yeah, it's and what I kept telling farms, I mean, that's why we plan, because you had a plan A, but we got to make these adjustments that have to be, you know, it's halftime and you're going like, we're getting our butts kicked out there by the weather. How do we make an adjustment to make it work? Not, you know, where I do think it's worse, where it's like, well, we plan this, let's just do it. It's like, no, if someone else is right, you change it.
What do you mean, Todd? The plan's a plan.
Yeah, right.
You got to work the plan. If you don't work your plan, can't plan your work.
And farmers have always been good at, you know, adapting and to change and used to working around the weather. So I don't think it's anything
out of
the ordinary that way.
Just, you know, it's we're really the mirror image of last year, where last year we weren't necessarily talking about what's going to happen if we can't plant. It's like, when is what we planted going to come up?
You know what's really crazy about saying that, Matt, is we said the same thing last year, but we were planted like a month ago.
Yep.
And we're still waiting at this point last year for some stuff to come up. Out. So
right.
That was one thing a grower said to me this week, was like, well, I'm not too concerned because we had it planted last year and it didn't emerge. This year we're going to plant it and hopefully it's going to, I mean, now that it's warm and we do have moisture, it's going to come out of the ground fast.
Right.
So I just think if you got fields you don't get planted, there's a reason you didn't get them planted, most likely. Yes, it rained a lot, but they're probably poorly drained or what have you. Maybe try to get a tile plow out there and get some tile done. And
yeah, it's a good opportunity for that.
Maybe some summer forage. Maybe you're a cash cropper and you have a neighbor dairy that's not looking so good. You know, their yields are probably going to be down planting almost June 1st versus May 1st. So maybe they'll be looking for some extra forage.
I mean, worst case scenario, it becomes a cover crop and at least it keeps the weeds down.
Right.
That's the biggest.
That's the thing that some farmers miss out on when we don't plant fields, is like, just don't ignore them. Like, why would we let all these weeds, especially water hemp, like, why can we let these grow and produce hundreds of thousands of more seeds that don't need to be out there?
And it costs money to spray it three times when you don't plant it. It costs money to work it if you're going to go out there and just work it under a bunch of time. Like, save yourself the hassle and at least get something out there to cover it. Yeah, there's seed costs, but again, if you're going to spray it or work it, you're going to spend money anyway, so you might as well have something that you can manage then and maybe sell to a neighbor for feed or whatever happens. So, and it opens up a good window for wheat. You know, you can,
right
in the fall, as long as things or late summer. Things aren't crazy.
I have a love-hate relationship with that thought, though, Matt, because if it's wet and then we plant wheat to it, is it going to drown out next year? Right. Like that whole... But if you tile it, it'll be fine.
I say, you had plenty of time to tile it between now and, right. and fall, right?
So. Right. You guys have many guys that do fungicide on alfalfa? We got talking about a wheat, but what about alfalfa?
Sometimes, but not much this year. And it's been a tough year because we thought we were going to have it off by mid-May. So it was like that wasn't even really a consideration. And it was dry, and then you switched to being so wet. Do you have any out there? And my question would be too is like where I see it lodging, I don't know that fungicide would have helped anyway because it would have been on like a month ago, that's for sure,
right?
Even before that,
right?
And I you know, when it's lodged and you get all that kind of close to that soil contact, I think those leaves, you're just going to lose them, like it's not,
it's a foregone conclusion,
right? It's but. Do you have any with fungicide out, and have you seen
two,
it lodging less or looking better?
Not lodging less, by no means. In fact, maybe it's healthier and it's lodging more.
Sure.
But
sure.
It's both low lignin, so it's sure. not super, you know, there's that part of it too, right? Like, but I just, considering that with as much moisture as we've gotten in lodged fields, are we going to have those decisions this year to think about? And maybe if you haven't cut first crop, take a look at your, you know, the understory, if you will, of the, to see if you have some black stem or some leaf spot that, you know, maybe.
I'm like, everybody has.
Yeah, everybody's got
it. Because especially yeah. black stem, I mean, it's all down there, you know, and you get 36-inch tall alfalfa and you can, honestly, it's crazy how easy to walk because it's all just
right
laying down.
Well, yeah, you walk up alfalfa field with it out ever touching the ground.
Right.
Because you're just walking on the alfalfa.
On the alfalfa. So it's just, fortunately, I mean, I've literally yet to see a flower on alfalfa, which blows me away. So, like, physiologically, something, it's different than normal that way, that it didn't go to.
There was some. I mean, literally some plants, I was in a field yesterday and there was no buds even.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
So that part of this, I mean, if it was just, it's that cool through May that it never really matured or what, but physiologically this is a different plant, you know, than a normal, what we're used to this time.
So. Right. Compared to what the height is to where, you know, normally we would have been, we're pretty close to normal harvesting time really right now, but as tall and everything. I saw some stuff earlier this week that was like, you could tell it was getting ready to flower, but it wasn't like the whole field either. It was just certain plants were that far along. And like one of you guys said, the, you know, there are buds, firm buds in those plants. But then some of the plants, it was like maybe early bud or hard to find a bud to begin with. So yeah, it's just been a different animal this year. And next year will be different too.
Just like last year was different.
Yep.
So the last issue I got here is kind of a really weird one. Had really bad soybean emergence, planted like late April. So we're like, why are these beans taking for so long?
Even the ones, all the beans this spring seem like they're taking forever.
And this one in particular, like I told the guy last week, I'm like, yeah, we're at like 68 to 86,000. Yeah, and he's like...
And all the fields are at 70 to 80,000. So yeah, I'm intrigued what you're going to say here, Bill,
because
we're seeing that like everywhere. That
I actually was going to vox it out to our group chat in our company. Like, are you guys all seeing bad soybean emerge? You know, because it just seems like this year isn't what we would think. So anyway, this sandy ground got planted late April, and I thought, I mean, it's almost June. This stuff should be. Why is it not up yet? And so we got talking yesterday, and the farmer's like, yeah, I think I figured out what's going on. And they roll their fields before they plant to have a firm seed bed when they plant. Yep. So they roll them, then they plant them, and then the headlands, for whatever reason, get double
rolled.
Yeah. He rolls them twice. And apparently his uncle who was planting the soybeans checked depth in the headlands and didn't check depth
in the field.
The field. And so he's like, oh, it's shallow in the headlands. So he clicked her a couple clicks deeper and then got in the field, and it must have just
shot him way deeper.
As firm because it was only rolled once. So we figured out that the beans in the headlands were planted like at 2 inches, and the beans in the field were planted at like 3.5 or more. And so it just literally was time. And I was digging and digging, and you kind of sometimes when you miss some things like this in agronomy, you're like, how could have I missed this? It's like, I guess I wasn't digging 4 inches deep.
Right. You don't assume they're down. Yeah.
Right. So, I mean,
you're just like, I must not be on the row. Like, I thought I was on the row.
Right.
And maybe it's on the sidewall.
Too, because in bean planting like that, too, there'll be some at an inch.
Right.
And some are way down at 4. You just didn't.
Yeah, and so it's like, oh man, how did I miss this? But he's like, yeah, I think I figured it out because we double roll up. So my point of bringing this up is if you're doing some, like, I don't want to say this is weird, but just doing some different things in fields, make sure you're checking both spots that you're doing different things in to make sure you're doing the right thing in the right spot. Had this grower checked inside the field and not in the headlands, we wouldn't. When I got to the field yesterday, I literally took a picture of it. We had 3-inch tall soybean, a 1-inch tall soybean, and then ones that were literally just crooking and coming out of the ground.
Sure.
So it's amazing to me they're not rotted or chewed on, but they're still coming up. So just kind of watch that. Obviously, you know, plant 2024 is almost done, but going in the future, if you do some weird things in fields, just kind of make sure you're keeping it aware of what that ramification could be in those areas back to back that you're doing different things in.
Yeah, we've got a field, soybean field, that they're doing a like kind of a test plot thing, and they worked it with a high speed disc, used a curse buster, and a no tilled. And the differences between those, like, there's population differences, but there's also emergence timing differences where there's still plants coming, so it's hard to really gauge population yet because of the different, you know, tillages that were done and stuff. So yeah, depending on how you planted could make some of that up too, as far as some of these soils maybe just didn't warm up quite as fast. I mean, in general, what blows me away this year, I think a little bit, is that soils never really got that cold through winter. And so we started warmer than normal in the spring, but we never really haven't really seen the temps jump in the soils. Like, they're staying a little bit cooler than they normally would be, and that might be part of this factor too. So
Matt, at our weather station where we have the soil temperature meter at 12 inches, it is 54 degrees today right now.
Okay.
So not...
Yeah, not
overly warm. I mean, that's at 12 inches, not at 6. But yeah.
No, I was in a field, the 2-inch sensor yesterday at, what time was I there? Like 1 o'clock. It was mid-60s.
Mm-hmm.
So good temperature, but yeah, still not, you know, not super high by any means. So, all right, there you go. That's some things we're seeing in the field and things to consider whether you're doing fungicide. If you have to do some sort of, or are considering prevent plant, some thoughts to do with those fields. Soybean depth and emergence might be a little shaky, but hopefully things will work themselves out in the next couple weeks here as we increase temperatures soon. Now we'll move into our spotlight for today. So will 2024 be the year of the rootworm beetle? So shaping up to be that way. Corn rootworm is an annual problem in a lot of fields in the Corn Belt. 2024 is shaping up to be no exception. This year, corn rootworms, along with other insects, appear to be showing up earlier, probably due to some of the warmer temperatures we've had through our winter. According to Ashley Dean, Extension Specialist for Field Crop Entomology at Iowa State University, she believes they were able to handle the overwintering better because of those mild temps. And so corn rootworm is, in Iowa, the number one pest of corn. And I think it's pretty high around here, too. as far as pests go. So they're just a nice all-around pest. They can feed on your roots, and they come out of the ground, and they feed on your silks and do all sorts of fun damage to the plant. So
they're not nice.
They're not something we look forward to in a year. So heat unit thresholds have been either met or exceeded in a lot of areas, and soil conditions are favorable for at least on a scattered basis of hatches to occur. So not that we don't scout for them, but it's always important to keep an eye out for that root feeding, the beetles as they emerge. So that's something we're always looking for, but we'll pay special attention to this year and keep track, hopefully, of those populations. So let's see what happens. Now we'll move into our Ag History Minute. So we had an article a couple weeks ago that referenced this, but the milk tradition at the Indianapolis 500, winners drink milk, is one of the most beloved phrases and traditions of the sport in Indiana. That tradition started when driver Lewis Meyer simply requested buttermilk to quench his thirst after a race in 1936. The drink of milk has since evolved from a thirst-satisfying beverage to a ceremonial handoff, with an Indiana dairy farmer giving the iconic glass bottle of milk to the winner, with over 250,000 people watching in person and more worldwide. Each year, two Indiana dairy farmers carry out the winner's drink milk tradition in the victory circle of the Indianapolis 500. Dairy farmers represent their colleagues' hard and dedicated work to bring the nutritious drink to so many. A rookie is selected each year who spends the first year training to deliver the bottled milk to the winning chief mechanic and winning team owner. The following year, the rookie becomes the official milk person and is given the honor of handing the ice-cold bottle of milk to the winning driver of the Indy 500. Drivers who are asked for their milk preferences before the race, they are given the options of fat-free, 2%, or whole milk. Whole milk is the most popular choice by drivers. So there you go. Chug nice cold glass of cold two whole milk or 2%. I can't see drinking the fat free, but the other two wouldn't be so bad.
Great, thank you, Matt. Thank you to our listeners out there. So you got the winners drink milk, but winners also listen to Tilth Talk Radio. All you need to do is subscribe to the podcast by going searching Tilth Talk Radio on Apple Podcasts or on Android. You get an app like Podcast Addict. You can also listen on your computer or smartphone browser. Go to tilthag.com/podcast. You can follow us on Facebook and X at Tilth Talk Radio.
All right. Thanks, Todd. Now we'll move into our Cool Beans, That's Corny, and some current events. So Cool Beans?
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans.
Cool Beans. Our Cool Beans this week. Culver's has pledged $25,000 to FFA and support for dairy farmers. So supporting dairy farmers is one of the things Culver's believes in. If you've ever driven down on 151 toward Madison, you might have seen a big blue barn that says, "Thank you, farmers." During the National Dairy Month in June, the restaurant chain is encouraging people to support dairy farmers by enjoying their favorite frozen treat, even if it isn't Culver's fresh frozen custard. Culver's has been a champion of frozen custard since its founding in 1984, long crediting its relationships with farmers and the quality of the dairy it produces for the success of its beloved fresh frozen custard. Those farmers are the ones who make it possible for other brands to serve popular dairy desserts, from ice cream to soft serve. Culver's is hoping to rally support for dairy farms by encouraging people to pick up those treats through National Dairy Month, whether it's Culver's or not. To further deepen its longstanding support of the next generation of farmers, Culver's is pledging an additional $25,000 to the National FFA organization to help fund dairy-specific programming and lesson plans. With that donation, Culver's hopes to inspire and equip future dairy farmers with the tools they need to continue providing the nation's growing population with high-quality dairy. Culver's has enjoyed a strong partnership with FFA the past decade through the Culver's Thank You Farmers Project. Since the program's creation in 2013, Chain has donated a total of $5 million to support the future of agriculture, including $2.5 million to fund FFA's development of young agricultural leaders. $230,000 of the program's donations have gone directly to the Milk Quality Career Development Event, which allows FFA members to demonstrate their knowledge about quality production, processing, distribution, promotion, and marketing of milk and dairy foods. So, as we said before, tomorrow starts June Dairy Month, so whether it's milk, ice cream, cheese, what have you,
enjoy custard, some... Custard?
Custard. I guess, in my mind, it falls under the ice cream category. Anything
it does.
Cold and frozen. But whatever your preferred way of consuming dairy is, continue to do that through the month of June as we support dairy farms and go to a dairy breakfast, get some delicious eggs and cheese and whatever else they are serving at your local dairy breakfast. All right, that's corny this week. China has blocked some beef from the U.S. Over detection of ractopamine, and China's import block is directly related to the JBS Greeley, Colorado plant, according to a notice on the USDA's Food Safety Inspection website. So they say China has a zero tolerance for ractopamine in beef products. Under current rules, facilities may be suspended for initial ractopamine findings. I have no idea if I'm saying that right. During testing upon arrival, spokesperson from FSIS says ractopamine was detected by customs in China in a batch of frozen beef Omasum products that were exported. Products were destroyed in accordance with the country's regulation, Omasum being the third stomach of the ruminant animal. And it says FSIS is conducting a investigation into what happened. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that this has happened. Usually it's when it's going other countries, they're pretty careful about this stuff. So ractopamine is a feed additive used to improve efficiency in livestock and has been banned or restricted in at least 160 countries, including China and the European Union. So, wah-wah, JBS. All right, wrap things up then with our Feel Good Friday. We're continuing our march into June Dairy Month with discussion of a local breakfast on the farm, and that is at Erickson's Dairy Farm. It'll be happening June 9th, as we mentioned before. So cows conservation are on display at the Outagamie Breakfast on the Farm this year. Randy and Carol Erickson purchased a small dairy farm in northwestern Outagamie County in 1980, starting with 35 cows. Their son Adam and his wife Christy have joined the operation in 2007. Today the dairy herd has grown to 650 cows, and the farm has expanded to 1,700 acres on which they raise alfalfa, grass, and corn. Erickson's are the host family for Outagamie County's Dairy Breakfast, happening on June 9th from 8 to noon. Over the years, the Erickson's have modernized their operation with a double 10 herringbone milking parlor adjacent to two sand-bedded freestall barns. They've used GPS equipment on their for their cropping activities, and both Adam and his father are working with cows and equipment. So it's going to be a great opportunity to get out there. They are also a conservation-minded farm. Their passion for farming runs deep, and they are a member of the Upper Fox Wolf Demonstration Farms, which I get to work with them and other farms in that area on some of the conservation practices that fit their farm. So it's a great opportunity. They're great farmers and happy to see them willing to step up and host for this year. I know Outagamie was having trouble finding a host this year, and Erickson stepped up and said they would do it. So the menu of this year's breakfast is a hearty egg omelet, pancakes, breakfast ham, yogurt, Wisconsin cheeses, Manderfield cinnamon rolls, milk, coffee, and Culver's frozen custard. So,
Todd, do you have to serve the custard this year?
No, they ever, like Culver's took it over.
FFA's out.
FFA got, yeah, we used to have
alumni,
to like.
FFA alumni got out.
You have to scoop, I think it was like Cedar Crest.
Yeah.
And we'd scoop and then Those Culver's kind of came in, which was fine. That was actually like,
what are those, 2-3 gallon?
They're like a weird, they weren't. They were big. They were 3 gallon.
3, I think. Yeah.
And then like the outside would be like mush, and then the inner part would be like rock hard. So like my job for a while was to pull the, because the other part is if you didn't pull them out and the whole thing was rock hard, you couldn't like scoop it. It was just, you know, like this ice ball. So yeah, my job would be about like 30 minutes before we were going to scoop it. You'd pull it out of the freezer, let it melt a little bit, and then you'd scoop around the sides, and then you'd leave it melt in the middle. There was a whole process, but it was having Culver's with their custards, probably a little better because it's just a little easier for them to, you know, mass make it.
Do they bring their Culver's custard machine from the restaurant?
I think they're all...
Are they prepackaged?
Or is it prepackaged?
I think it's all pre in a little cup, and then they just add their berries to it.
You can do that for like weddings and stuff.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was at a wedding. They had
like Culver's?
Yeah, the Culver's cups. You could have Culver's ice cream. It was a dairy farmer that did it.
Imagine Scoopy will be there too, walking around, handing out coupons maybe. I don't know. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us, Matt.
So today we talked about some issues we're seeing out in the field. It's getting to be time to put that fungicide on your wheat if you're going to do so. If you don't get that field planted, consider summer forages, tile, or cover cropping to keep the weeds down in those fields. Assessing your alfalfa, hopefully you're able to harvest now that we're getting a little bit of dry weather, and soybean depth and emergence is something we'll be keeping an eye on. In our spotlight, we looked at 2024 being a potential prime year for corn rootworm. Ag History Minute, we talked the milk tradition at the Indy 500. Cool beans this week, Culver's pledged $25,000 to FFA. That's corny, China blocking beef from U.S. And our Field Good Friday, join Erickson's family at Outagamie County's Breakfast on the Farm June 9th. Thanks for listening. As always, happy farming.